Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Over the past few weeks, activists, community members, and members of the public have been speaking out against San Francisco Mayor Daniel Lurie's almost $16 billion proposed budget, which includes $200 million in nonprofit funding cuts over 2 years. On Monday, hundreds turned out at the San Francisco Board of Supervisors Budget and Appropriations Committee meeting to make their voices heard. They say Mayor Lurie's budget threatens to gut everything from violence prevention and eviction defense to food security and mental health care. Mayor Lurie says the cuts are needed to address San Francisco's $817 million projected deficit over the next 2 years. Mission Local reports that Adrian Tertanati, the executive director of Open Door Legal, a free legal aid nonprofit that stands to lose 60% of its funding for civil legal services, waited for hours outside the hearing room on Monday, leaning on a cane out of exhaustion. Adrian Tertanati is on day 13 of a hunger strike protesting cuts to civil legal aid, and Mission Local has been writing about his story. The People's Budget Coalition, which includes more than 150 groups and organizations, is demanding a budget that reflects the needs of working-class San Franciscans, immigrants, and unhoused people. The Budget and Appropriations Committee is scheduled to vote on the bill today. We did invite Mayor Lurie to join us, but his office said he was unavailable. Joining us now are three guests. Claire Lau is Deputy Political Director at the Chinese Progressive Association, and she has been speaking out on immigrant services. Hi, Claire. Welcome to the show.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having us here.
Thank you for joining us. Joe Wilson is Executive Director at Hospitality House. He's been speaking out on workforce development. Hi, Joe. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me. Good to hear you.
Great to have you. Eliana Binder is Director of Public Policy at Glide SF. Eliana's been speaking out about healthy food access. Hi, Eliana. Thank you for joining us.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. And if you'd like to join us, if you have any questions for our guests about this budget, if you've been following it, what are your thoughts about these cuts? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Claire, let's start with you. What concerns you the most about these budget cuts?
Yeah, so right now we are at unprecedented times for immigrants in this country, and San Francisco is very much built on the backs of immigrant families and working class communities of color. And we are really concerned that this budget is actually not upholding what the city claims to be, you know, a sanctuary city, but really not upholding its values as a sanctuary city. So we are seeing cuts to immigration services for rapid response services. We are seeing cuts to immigrant community infrastructure, and we are seeing cuts to immigrants' workers' rights protection programs that help immigrants are able to exercise their rights in the workplace. And so all these cuts are very concerning.
Have you been able to meet with Mayor Lurie to express your concerns or anyone on his staff?
Some of our team members have been able to meet with his staff and through different, you know, coalition spaces, been able to have some conversations. We understand that the current budget is, you know, difficult, but the fact of the matter is that our social safety net is falling apart at every level of government, from federal to state to locally. And right now, it is a time for San Francisco to actually strengthen the social safety net for immigrants, to make sure that we have the legal services that immigrants rely on, that immigrants know about their rights as immigrants, that we have in-language, culturally competent wraparound services that help them, you know, find jobs, get food, you know, have tenant protections, and also to make sure that immigrant workers can fight abuse in the workplace and fight wage theft. And all these things are really important to protecting immigrant communities.
Claire Lau is Deputy Political Director at the Chinese Progressive Association. Joe Wilson is Executive Director at Hospitality House. Joe, you've been at this for a long time now. You've seen a lot of budgets. You say that budgets are moral documents. What concerns you the most about this proposed budget? Joe, are you still with us?
I'm still here, sorry. Well, what concerns me the most that the budget cuts are disproportionately borne by communities of color, working class communities, immigrants, and poor people generally. And so that is not reflective of a moral budget document. I think that in difficult times, that's where we need our leaders the most to exercise not only sound judgment, but forward-thinking judgment. And that means that those with more have to pay more to help navigate this crisis, and those with less have to be invested in and lifted up more than in good times. And it's the exact opposite that we've seen so far with the mayor's budget.
And have you been able to meet with Mayor Lurie or anyone on his staff about your concerns?
We have been part of a couple of different groups that have been able to meet with the mayor and his staff. I think one of the continuing challenges is that there is a learning curve for a new administration, and I think it behooves the new administration to lean into the expertise that is available across the San Francisco. And frankly, this mayor, maybe more than most, has a unique opportunity to appeal to those with wealth in San Francisco, and not only voluntary contributions for particular initiatives, but serious thought about significant revenue measures that can help us manage this crisis. And we are looking at a reset, frankly, in terms of the ever-increasing income inequality in San Francisco that is wreaking havoc across communities, particularly working-class communities, that are still yet to recover from the COVID crisis.
And because there's so much going on right now, Joe, can you give us specifics? You're really concerned about the potential cuts to workforce development, housing services, and violence prevention programs. Can you tell us more about those?
Well, particularly with workforce, it is essential to the city to invest in its workforce development infrastructure. For multiple years, the number one cause of people's homelessness is typically loss of a job. Just behind that is the cost of housing. And it's not, frankly, it's not rocket science. It's fairly straightforward. And so those are the things we need to invest in. And we've taken, frankly, the opposite approach, particularly with workforce. For vulnerable job seekers, the city has a network of 7 neighborhood job centers and another 10 sector-based pilots to be able to get folks into particular industries. Those programs are being cut as we speak, and that further minimizes and compromises the ability of the city to take maximum use of the investments that they're making in other areas. And we're making an appeal to the mayor and the staff to invest more in workforce development programs. The 7 neighborhood job centers that are located in the key zip codes that are overrepresented in most of the negative aspects of our economy. We know that as we speak, there are nearly 20,000 San Franciscans that are currently unemployed. We have a Medi-Cal caseload that is now approaching 250,000 people in San Francisco, nearly 200,000 of them adults. That's one quarter of the city's adult population. And so we have a crisis on our hands, and it takes forward thinking to manage that.
Joe Wilson is Executive Director at Hospitality House. We're also joined by Eliana Binder, Director of Public Policy at Glide San Francisco. Eliana, you've been speaking out about healthy food access. Can you tell us what concerns you the most about this proposed budget?
Yes, there are a number of concerns, as Claire and Joe have outlined. For us at Glide, we are a champion of food access, food equity. We are very proud to be serving our community three meals a day, 364 days a year, over half a million meals per year. And we are deeply concerned about the threats to food security and the potential increases in hunger that can come from the discussions going on at the federal government right now, and how that can affect the state and local government. We know that the mayor's office is facing a really hard task of funding all the vital programs here and bracing for federal cuts, but we were very concerned to see the cuts to soda tax funded programs that support food security and food access in communities across the city. These programs are especially targeted towards communities that have been negatively impacted by the soda and sugary beverage industry marketing and the ways that that can have negative impacts on community members' health and well-being. So the funds from this tax are specifically designed to counteract the impacts over generations and years of that marketing and the health impacts that that has. So these programs help people have easier access to healthy food and clean drinking water, and actually can have cost savings in the long run for the city when it comes to people taking control of their and their community members' health and improving their health and well-being via better healthy food access.
And this is very important. Just to give listeners some context here, I'm reading now from a San Francisco Examiner piece from last week. This is by Natalia Gurevich. At least 20 San Francisco nonprofits could lose grant funding for community health programs from the city's annual soda tax under the mayor's proposed budget. San Francisco's sugary drinks distributor tax passed with 62.5% of the vote in November 2016, charging a 1 cent levy per ounce of a sugar-sweetened drink. And this would raise money to fund a number of nonprofits and the work that they do: oral health, clean water, school nutrition, physical wellness. And so this raised $72.5 million in revenue by the end of the 2023 fiscal year. Mayor Lurie's budget does not allocate any money for the community grants. So can you give us some more background on this, Eliana? Given that voters overwhelmingly passed this, why are these nonprofits going to potentially lose this grant funding? Have you been able to talk to the mayor or any of his staffers about this decision?
I haven't been able to talk to the mayor or his staffers about this decision specifically. We have been in somewhat regular conversation with his administration generally. Priorities. This decision came out with the mayor's budget at the beginning of this month, and it's been challenging to talk to the mayor's office or the mayor's budget office directly about this decision, although we do think they are aware of our concerns, and we have been speaking out and speaking to the Board of Supervisors about this. We are really concerned about what this means for honoring the will of the voters and what they intended when they passed this tax. Since it has been passed and the funding has been allocated, it has engaged 90,000 participants in these soda tax funded programs. That was actually just in fiscal year 23-24, and it really has measurable outcomes in terms of the participants understanding how sugary drinks can harm their health, drinking more water, being less worried about food access. So we really see the impacts of these programs, and the programs that are funded by them know this, the participants know this. There's an advisory committee that advises on how to spend these funds. That's why we've been trying to educate both people in city government and also the wider community about this. There might just be a lack of understanding of the importance of these funds. And there's been sort of a narrative that these funds need to go over to another department and for direct food access. We believe that funding direct food access is essential. We do that every day here at Glide. But we also believe that funding these programs that provide direct food access and do that broader systemic work of education, overcoming barriers to food access, empowering community members to support each other in taking control of their own health. These are also really essential programs, and we've been trying to do that education to uplift that we can fund both. It is not an either or. All types of food access programs are vital, especially given what we're facing at the federal level right now.
Eliana Binder is Director of Public Policy at Glide San Francisco. Joe Wilson is Executive Director at Hospitality House. And Claire Lau is Deputy Political Director at the Chinese Progressive Association. Over the past few weeks, activists, community members have been speaking out against San Francisco Mayor Daniel Lurie's almost $16 billion proposed budget, which includes $200 million in nonprofit funding cuts over 2 years. Mayor Lurie says the cuts are needed to address the city's $817 million projected deficit over the next 2 years. We did invite Mayor Lurie to join us, but his office said he was not available. We're going to continue to talk about this for the next 10 minutes. Then we'll be joined by moms with disabled children who went to Capitol Hill last week to urge Republicans to oppose Medicaid cuts. If you have any questions for our guests about San Francisco's budget, if you've been following this, what are your thoughts on these cuts and the budget overall? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Let's hear from Parker in San Francisco. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thank you so much for having me on, and thank you to your guests for the work you do both on behalf of and in support of San Franciscans. My question with the budget, I guess, is, you know, I'm hearing about these big cuts that they're doing to community spending and helping with different programs across the community. What is it really that they are not cutting? What is it that Mayor Lurie is, you know, trying to bolster with his budget? I just imagine, you know, I heard that story last year in the San Francisco Chronicle about the ballooned amount of spending that the sheriffs and the police officers in the city were getting based off overtime. And I just don't understand why the first reach is always for community spending and nonprofit funds. It just bothers me. And I guess I just want to understand a bit better. What is this budget trying to prioritize, given that that's the cuts it's doing? So thank you all.
All right. Thank you so much for that. This is so interesting. I always, when we do these shows, I feel like we need to do like a budget 101, because we're talking about a city of about 809,000 people or so. This is according to the official numbers. An almost $16 billion budget. This is a lot of money. Joe, do you want to take this one first? How is the money being spent? Where is it going?
Well, the caller hit it right on the head. I think this administration, among others, is prioritizing law enforcement, their, you know, definition of public safety versus community investments. And frankly, public safety is represented by, you know, communities that are healthy and thriving. You know, housing stability is public safety. Food security is public safety. Gainful employment options is public safety. Legal protections against eviction is public safety. When communities are healthy and thriving, that is public safety. And it is important to recognize that $16 billion is a big number. In reality, the discretionary portion of the budget, the city budget, meaning the money that the city actually has discretion over how to spend, when you take out federal dollars, state dollars, the enterprise departments that are self-sustaining, the voter-approved set-asides, which includes Proposition C, by the way, my mayor's trying to raid that, that number comes down to about $4+ billion. And what concerns community organizations, frankly, and people across San Francisco, is that more than a third of that, approaching now a half of that, 40% of that $44 billion, is targeted for law enforcement, police, fire, and sheriff, and the DA. And that leaves community organizations and community groups and the residents of San Francisco with far fewer options for uplifting and supporting, programs, resources, investments that actually help communities thrive, not just survive.
Well, Parker, thank you for the call. And just to add to this, Joe, you all work on the ground every day. You see what's happening on the streets of San Francisco. Can you give us a sense of just the level of inequality that we might not see? I mean, all of us see so many people suffering on the streets in this very wealthy city. But what about people who are really struggling to make ends meet, the things that you might not see on the streets? How has that really changed since COVID, Joe?
Well, I think the communities that were suffering prior to COVID are still suffering. Those investments that help communities rebuild have largely not been made. In every classroom in our public schools, at least one child is homeless. We know from the information that the city itself has published that people are becoming homeless at a younger and younger age, meaning, young people, and staying homeless longer and longer, meaning that they become homeless, younger, and we have more and more elderly people, living on the streets. That is unconscionable. And the city, both the size of San Francisco and the wealth that's generated in this city, to have that dynamic. And this is not a problem of visibility. This is not a problem of criminality. This is a problem of choices that are being made. And choices have consequences. Consequences have faces and names. And that's what we're seeing on the streets of San Francisco.
Eliana, as you said, Glide hands out lunches and food on a daily basis. What would you add to what Joe said? What changes have you seen since COVID that people might not know about who live in San Francisco?
Yes, as Joe said, so many of the community members who were struggling before COVID are struggling even more now. There were some additional investment and resources from the federal, state, and local level during COVID that were helpful to some people. Deeper investments in the shelter-in-place hotels that supported people who are on the street, even things like investing and expanding the child tax credit, which helped to lift so many children out of poverty. But we've seen a closure and a rollback of so many of those expansions so that some people are left off worse than they were before. And with increased challenges, we see things like people on the streets in the Tenderloin, where Glide is located, not even able to access clean water. Mm-hmm. There were clean water fountains that were three that were on the streets in the Tenderloin. That was the result of a campaign by community. They were removed, and we are still fighting to get them back. And in conversation with the city about that. So even something as basic that some people might take for granted every day, being able to go to your fridge or your sink and get yourself a glass of water, that is something that people who are living on the street or maybe even are housed in a place where they do not have regular kitchen access, those people are struggling with the basics of even clean water access. And that's in San Francisco, California in 2025.
Right. And then when you think about unhoused people drinking water, where do they go to the bathroom?
Yes, that is definitely another challenge. When you see, as Joe is speaking to, there's so much concern about street conditions, and that's something that we all are concerned about. But when you look at it in terms of the people who are on the street and what they're experiencing, and the way that the street conditions get to where they are, it comes from not having that basic bathroom access, that basic water access, and of course, access to housing, jobs, and food that creates what we're seeing in our communities and the suffering and struggling that's going on.
And Claire, I think it's safe to assume that immigrants are now facing so many issues. Even, you know, before this administration came to office, immigrants were struggling to make ends meet. And now immigrants are afraid to do their daily activities, to go to work, to go to school, to speak out. Can you give us a sense of what immigrants are facing right now in San Francisco?
Yeah, absolutely. So they're definitely, you know, in addition to being afraid to go to school, go to work, even for those who are able to go to work, are facing a lot of abuses and not able to speak up. And so just some examples, like Juan, he's a construction worker the Workers' Rights Community Collaborative that the city is trying to defund has been helping. And he basically was simply not paid by his boss and resorted to borrowing money to pay rent. But he was too afraid to speak up to, you know, go reach out to the government for help because of his immigration status. And even for those who have, you know, are not undocumented, there is the story of Shu Hua, who is a domestic worker. She had been working for 20 hours a day, 7 days a week, basically only getting 4 hours of sleep every single day as a home care worker and not being paid fully for her work, and was experiencing workplace injuries. And she was too afraid to speak up in fear of losing her job and also losing a roof over her head because she was living in her employer's home. And so these are the kinds of stories of immigrants, how they are suffering in invisible ways, and how, you know, we often don't think about it in such a wealthy city as San Francisco, but immigrants are the ones who are actually making the city work and doing the invisible work. And programs like the Workers' Rights Collaborative not only teach immigrants about their rights, but also, you know, help them through step-by-step the process of calculating owed wages and talking to their boss, demanding back wages, and filing complaints with the city and the state.
Wow. Is she a caregiver?
Yeah, she is a caregiver. And she actually, you know, now has left that employer after receiving so much abuse. And we're working with her to calculate her back wages and file wage theft claims. And she's actually living in a woman's shelter right now.
How often do you hear stories like this, working 20 hours a day?
Unfortunately, it is quite common, especially for domestic workers, to work, like, you know, really long hours that are not legal. And then even in other industries, like, you know, the restaurant and food industries, you know, there's a lot of abuse, a lot of overtime that is unpaid. You know, people are not getting rest breaks, meal breaks, paid sick leave, you know, work 10 to 12 hours without a single break, and are not getting paid overtime. This is, like, very common in immigrant communities, especially in those who don't speak English because they don't know about their rights and they don't know how to advocate for themselves, and they're too afraid to speak up. Wow. And this is where, like, community nonprofits come in, is that we teach them about their rights. We meet with them one-on-one. We try to help them overcome their fear and, you know, go through the process of reclaiming back wages.
Gosh, Claire, we're definitely going to have to do a show about this. What is the timeline for this budget? The Budget and Appropriations Committee is scheduled to vote on the bill today.
Yes, that's correct. Today is called what they call the add-back night, where their negotiations happen with the Budget and Appropriations Committee and the mayor. And usually it goes into, you know, very, very late at night or early in the morning tomorrow. And you'll see advocates camped out at City Hall, you know, really fighting for their programs to be restored. And yeah, it's usually an intense day and night, and tonight hopefully will be when the Budget and Appropriations Committee will actually, finalize the deal making basically in the budget process.
Claire Lau is Deputy Political Director at the Chinese Progressive Association. Joe Wilson is Executive Director at Hospitality House. Eliana Binder is Director of Public Policy at Glide San Francisco. Thank you all so much for joining us. And we'd love to have you back to continue this conversation about what is happening to immigrant communities, low-income communities in San Francisco. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having
Thank
us.
Thank you so much,
Thank
Rose.
You.
Thank you. Coming up after a break, we will speak with two moms whose disabled children went to Capitol Hill last week to urge Republicans to vote against the bill that would cut Medicaid. They are with a group called Little Lobbyists. We'll be back after this.